This is the Generations Radio Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm a homeschool father of five. We are raising our kids out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado and soon to be our grandkids out here as the generational vision just continues in the Swanson family. Steve Vaughn.
That is just great. I need some married kids so that I can have my next generation coming up.
You need to get a little bit of this generational vision going for you, Steve.
Yeah, well, I have the vision. I just don't have the guys.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right. Well, if there's anybody listening to this radio program, Steve has the most beautiful girls in the whole world, and this is not a paid advertisement. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about education, Steve. Education is collapsing now in America. And, you know, everything is collapsing right now. What are we saying? It's all coming down right now.
Yeah.
But education's been collapsing for 30 years. And, of course, the college has been collapsing for 10 years. 1 million students leaving college in the last 10 years. That's a huge market drift for colleges, universities in America. Harvard is preparing for a scenario in which all academics will be conducted remotely in the fall. That means no brick, no mortar, just online. And the state of Virginia is considering canceling public schools for 2 years. Make that 20.
Wow. That's crazy. So you don't think they will ever reopen again?
Well, I just say make that 20 because that gives the free market in education something of a shot, such that the monopolized state-funded naturalistic, materialistic worldview that's shoved down the throats of 94% of American kids doesn't happen for, you know, the next 20 years. Well, Financial Times and Forbes magazine on this over the last day or two, even before coronavirus, 30% of colleges tracked by rating agency Moody's were running deficits. It's 30% running deficit, while 15% of public universities had less than 90 days of cash on hand. And with colleges shuttered, revenues reduced, endowment investments plunging, and the added struggle of shifting from physical to virtual education, Moody's has downgraded the entire sector of universities and colleges to negative from stable. So it's not stable anymore. It is negative. In one survey this week, 57% of university presidents said they plan to lay off staff. Half said they would merge or eliminate some programs, while 64% said that long-term financial viability was their most pressing issue. They've expecting something of a decline of $23 billion in revenue over the next academic year. So the college bubble that has been bursting is now, I guess, pretty much eking out the last little bit of gas in the bubble. Forbes magazine also had something similar. Speaking of the declining industry of colleges and universities, even before the COVID-19 pandemic, a large number of universities were in fair to poor financial shape, partly the result of a roughly 11% enrollment decline in U.S. higher education of the last decade, just mentioned that, and partly because of declining public support. Three types of schools, especially in trouble, non-selective private colleges with modest endowments, usually with a liberal arts emphasis. The bottom and middle tier state schools, especially in states, mostly in the East and Midwest, with stagnant population growth and the community colleges on the decline. An analysis last fall by Forbes gave 177 of 933 rated private schools 19%, a D grade for financial health, up sharply from 2013. The number was just 110. So it's a huge increase in just the last 7 or 8 years in terms of those that are about ready to kick the bucket. The modal grade of C, earned by 498, represents institutions with modest reserves, in some cases probably unable to withstand an unanticipated fiscal tsunami, much of what we've seen happen right now. All told, an extraordinary 72% of schools had a C grade or worse, which could mean that 72% of colleges and universities will be defunct in the next year or two. Of course, given an economic tsunami or a worldwide depression, which may be happening for all we know. Well, Steve, the primary problem with the breakdown of Western culture is the breakdown of Western ideas. And I'm writing a book called The Rise and Fall of the West. And the causal element of the collapse of the Western world is the college, because the college is the promulgator of the ideologies that have destroyed the West. I think people need to understand that it is ideology that forms the foundation of any society. And when you move from an ideology, a foundation that has strong footings, to something that is, well, effectively nihilistic, relativistic, and useless for building societies, you pretty much need to kiss those institutions and the civilization upon which it is being built goodbye. And that's what's happening now. The source of humanist materialistic ideologies are rooted in the ideas conveyed in the colleges in America. 99.9% of colleges teach an old earth evolutionary dogma. We dedicated a program or two to this 3 to 4 years ago. College professors now more liberal, more anti-Christian by 50% in the last 25 years. That is, we've had a massive increase of those college professors that oppose a Christian world and life view. In a recent study, the Democrat to Republican ratio was 12-1. Not that every Republican is a good guy, but, you know, Democrat to Republican ratio now 12-1. In American universities and among the younger professors, 23-1. And Steve, we heard this. You know, my kids raised in red state homes off the blue state schools, my kids will stand strong. And they do stand strong for a year or for maybe 2 years, but it's the third and fourth year where they fold. Most red kids going to blue state Christian colleges and pagan colleges, they will fold. They will fold in 3 to 4 years. That is the trend we have seen since John Dewey and G. Stanley Hall and the other examples of the late 19th century that began their route to apostasy as they checked into the local university. And I tell the story in Apostate, the Men Who Destroyed the Christian West. It was the university and the college that took guys like G. Stanley Hall and John Dewey, who were raised in Christian homes by Christian parents. It was the universities and colleges that took them down the wrong way and took them into a secular materialistic mindset and then pretty much destroyed them and then went on to destroy the rest of our Western society. So ultimately, it was the worldview that broke them down.
Yeah, and it's just a vicious cycle anyway, because you've got the educators then educating the educators, who will then come and train the students in the way that they have been educated, and then those students keep going down the same path to become the educators of tomorrow, and the parents of tomorrow, and the leaders of tomorrow. And so this has been going on for a long, long time. This hasn't just happened in the last decade. This has been happening over the last 80 to 100, 150 years or so, ever since, you know, Frankfurt School sent all of their people over to basically ruin the United States with communistic and ideological ideas.
Mm-hmm. And we're not saying that every Christian kid that makes it into a college or university is going to go south, but friends, by and large, that's what happens. There are exceptions to the rule, but this is the way it works. This is the way it's been working since John Dewey and G. Stanley Hall from the 1890s. This is the process. This is how you get an increasingly broken down Christian worldview in the churches, etc. It certainly is most prevalent in the liberal arts majors as well, because liberal arts majors are liberal unless we're fighting tooth and nail against the ideologies that underlie the liberal arts curriculum. Well, Francis Schaeffer, I was just reading this the other day as I'm working on my book, The Rise and Fall of the West, which is happening now, announced by so many prophets over some 150 years. We dedicated a program to that last week. But Francis Schaeffer, How Should We Then Live, ends his book with this assessment. This is Francis Schaeffer, How Shall We Then Live? The weak humanistic ideals are not and will not be enough in our generation or for the future. The little Roman bridge that would stand when people walked over it would break under the weight of a truck. If further economic recessions come, if fear of the loss of personal peace and prosperity increases, if terrorism spreads, if wars intensify, these things will crush the little bridge. That is our civilization. Okay, my friends, well, that's it. The bottom line is the ideologies of the humanist, the materialist, is just incapable of holding up a civilization, and holding up a civilization during the kinds of recessions and wars that we are facing right now. Well, let's talk more about what to do with our children next on the Generations Broadcast. Friends, listen. There is nothing families need more than godly husbands and fathers, spiritual men, praying men, men who are strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Oh, that God would raise up stronger men, gentle, faithful shepherds, covenant keepers, men who won't quit, men who stay in the battle, men who persevere when the going gets tough, sacrificial lovers, robust men, not snowflakes. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. So the apostle tells us, quit ye like men, be strong. That's why the Shepherds Conference each year in my home here in Elizabeth, Colorado. Let me tell you, it's the best fellowship, the best worship, the best encouragement, the best exhortation, 5 days of immersive study in the Word of God, prayer and fellowship at my place out here on the Eastern Plains of Colorado, September 28th through October 2nd this year. Here's the caveat. There are only 45 spots open. Reserve now at generations.org/shepherds. That's generations.org/shepherds. And we are back on the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you. Steve Vaughn also with me today. And Steve, online education is coming back, or is coming. I think the coronavirus will only intensify this to the point of doubling or tripling the number of students that are going to opt for the online education. Granted, some students have a hard time concentrating, disciplining themselves to the work, et cetera, unless they go to the brick and mortar college. But, you know, with the college debt through the ceiling, with the college university down to junk bond status, with all the debt, with the fall off of participation, this thing's done. This college thing is done. And we're moving towards the brick and mortar. Now, we have, for the last 10 years of this broadcast, encouraged homeschoolers especially to think out of the box. When it comes to college and university, I always thought that homeschoolers would be more likely to think out of the box because it was time to think out of the box. But it's hard to get anybody to think out of the box. But it's time to think out of the box because the box is burning up. Literally, this box is burning up. Time to get out of the box. And I'm hoping, I'm pleading, I'm begging homeschooling parents, Christian parents, to step back and say, by faith, perhaps we should consider some other approach for little Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego than to give them the king's food and the king's liberal arts worldviews. Perhaps it's time now to think of something different, a different approach for putting Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into a college, university, a preparatory school, or some kind of a preparatory thing to engage them into the macroeconomy. Well, the average cost of an online school, a four-year degree, is $30,000 versus $85,000 for brick and mortar. That's, what, a 60% saving? So right there, it seems to me that this makes a lot of sense, especially if you don't want to take $2 trillion of debt into a busted economy and hope that you get a job in the year 2022. The average cost is $30,000 versus $85,000 for the brick and mortar school. That seems to make a lot of sense. Plus, there's some 7 million students now enrolled in online courses, 275 plus accredited online universities. 77% of educators believe that online learning is just as good as traditional learning, if not better. And 70% of all students are effectively saying the same thing. The average score of online learners on standardized tests now 59th percentile versus the 50th percentile for classroom learners. So it seems to me that the online approach is more and more attractive to families and to young people who may not want to break the bank and use up their life on a brick-and-mortar college. Now, what do your kids miss out on with online education? I want to touch on this before we're done with this edition of the program, Steve. One of the things that your kids will miss out on is socialization. And of course, that was the question. That was the question everybody asked us when it came to homeschooling. You remember that?
Steve. Oh, yeah. What about socialization? Yeah. Are they going to ever have any friends? What about all these peer groups that they could be involved in? And we're saying, no. You know, we want them to be able to relate to people of every age. And this false forced into trying to put everybody of the same age together from the time they're in kindergarten all the way through high school is just ridiculous, because they're not going to be grouped together with people their age for the rest of their life. And most of their life, they're not going to be grouped together with people their age.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. People ask me the question, what about socialization? That's another reason why we want to homeschool our kids.
Yeah.
Yet another reason, you know, because, well, socialization is, you get the best socialization. Now, it's how you define socialization. Of course, the right form of socialization is the ability to interact with people who don't act and think just like you. And it's also the ability to act rightly and socialize properly with others. Put 2 2-year-olds in a room by themselves with one toy for 2 minutes. What happens? Right?
I mean, it's going to be a bit of a fight.
It's a socialization experiment. Well, you know, of course, it takes a parent. It takes adults to monitor and to work with children to enable proper socialization. Usually takes about 18 to 19 to 24 years to make that happen. And so here's what you miss out on without the brick and mortar, with the online education. 4 years of bad, immature socialization, hanging out with too many fools who never grew up. And there are exceptions to this, of course, but fewer and fewer. The number of kids fornicating on drugs, partying, or just engaging in foolish, unedifying conversation is out of control, even in the smaller Christian colleges. And this is what I'm hearing from young Christian kids who are attending these colleges. I've heard this complaint that, yes, even with the best schools, you put 20, 25, 30, 18-year-old kids in a dorm together or on a campus together. You get 100 18-year-old kids in a given area for, I don't know, 6 days. And what happens? You remember that book that was written about those young boys that were put on the island?
Yeah, Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Flies, that's it, sorry. Lord of the Flies, right. So it's a Lord of the Flies sort of a situation. Now some would say, well, the 18-year-olds that are produced today are some of the most mature and amazing productions of human maturity that we have ever seen in the history of mankind. I guess I would disagree. I'm not hearing that from those that are attending these colleges. I'm certainly not hearing that. Certainly we don't live in the age of maturity. We live in the age of the revolt against maturity. That's where we are today. So it's time for people to realize this. Thoughtful, edifying conversations of highly mature people, sober about life, about the spiritual condition of each other and the world around them. Is that what you're going to see on a college campus with 140 18-year-olds hanging out together? Is that what you'd see? Thoughtful, edifying conversations, highly mature people about the spiritual condition of each other, sober about life, sober about the world. Is that what you get?
No, I don't think you get that at all. A friend of mine once said that you put a bunch of teenagers together, you can pretty much cut the age in half as to how they're going to act. And so you put a bunch of 18-year-olds together, they're going to act like a bunch of 9-year-olds. They're not going to act like 18-year-olds. You put 20-year-olds together, they may act like 10-year-olds. It's not until they get out of college, get a job, get married, have kids. It's something about getting married and having kids that actually sets in, whoa, I'm responsible for something. But no, you're not going to get a lot of mature behavior by putting a bunch of 18-year-olds together.
Now, I'm sure we're going to hear parents saying, now, my child is an exception to the rule. And there are exceptions. Okay, granted, there are exceptions to this. But friends, I think it's time for us to be realistic. That's the exception. That's not the rule today. Where does it say in the Bible that our young men and women, 17, 18, 19, 20 years of age, have to be put into a crowd of 300 or 5,000 kids of their own age for 4 years in order to achieve maturity? Where would that be in the book of Proverbs? Or where would you find that in Titus?
I think it's in 1st First Imaginations, chapter 4.
Yeah, yeah. He who walks with wise men shall be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. So, friends, I think we need to think about socialization. And here's one other aspect of socialization to think about when it comes to the brick-and-mortar college. Tearing a young person out of the community where he was raised, family and church, tearing him away from the people who loved him, people who knew him, people who were walking with him, established a long-term relationship with him. Now, tearing him out of all of that, away from the adults who could mentor him and disciple him, severing the family bonds to create a new form of society in his life. Now, I wonder if that's really as wonderful as it's been cracked up to be. Now, at times, this may be helpful, but generally, doing this kind of thing has created a distancing of human relationships and anonymity in the modern wilderness of the postmodern. I think what's happened is it has hardwired a transience into modern life and an isolation in modern society. Friends, these are the kinds of things that an existentialistic society tends to do as it wanders in the wastelands east of Eden, and it absorbs the existentialistic individualism of John Paul Sartre. I think families need to ask the question, do I want this to happen to my children and my grandchildren as a rule? Now, again, there are exceptions, but I think families just need to grapple with this. Is the brick and mortar everything that it's cracked up to be?
I really don't think it is, and there's so many more options now today. None of my kids so far have gone to a brick and mortar school. My son graduated with a BS in business administration and is doing quite well in a business. And then my daughter graduated with a degree in music and is doing well herself. And I have two other daughters who are doing online college right now and hope to graduate with a communications degree and move on to something else that will help their family economy when they have a family.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are the sorts of things that people need to consider. You know, and I think you're also not going to deal with as much debt. You're not going to be dealing with as much inefficiency. They got to have their own apartment, their own utilities, et cetera, versus staying at home. And there's also accountability that happens, long-term accountability when they live with a family or they live in the church community where they were raised. There's accountability. And I don't think there's room for getting into the age of unaccountability where you just kind of float from flop house to dorm room to flop house for 6, 8, 10 years out of your life and just play the part of the modern existentialist vagabond running east of Eden. I just don't think there's a need for that. And this idea of a complete unaccountability in media choices, an absence of work and family economy, all the distractions, especially in a mixed boy-girl context, you know, throw 600 boys and girls in the same room for 10 years and see what, or 4 years and see what happens, kind of experiment. I'm just not sure this is the ideal. Now, I understand it has a lot to do with the Platonic society in which the philosopher kings rule, in which the family doesn't take a part, in which the local communities don't matter anymore. It's all bureaucratized. It's all governmentalized. It's all institutionalized. But I'm not sure it works as well for a Christian community, and I think we need to be thinking about these things. There are three things needed to prepare for life, and every family, every young person needs to take these into consideration. You need the books, you need worship and life. I think three legs on a stool, all three legs represent a very critical element. Without it, the stool falls down. If a Christian young person doesn't have the books, doesn't have the worship, doesn't have the life integration, they're going to be in trouble. So three things needed to prepare for life: books, worship, or that is spiritual discipleship, and life application or work. Those three things, absolutely essential. So ask yourself, does the college provide that? Now, you can get your books at a brick and mortar. You can get your books online. You can now get your books on YouTube. You can get your books read to you if you want. You can get your books about anywhere you want to these days. Get them at Amazon for $400 or pay $68,000 or $86,000 to get them at a brick and mortar. Either way, you still got to get the books. You got to get some kind of academic learning. You need to have some kind of preparation for the plumbing work. Now, plumbers may not need as many books as pastors or accountants per se. The accountant might need 80 books. The plumber might need 4 books, and the pastor may need 340 books, but one way or the other, they've got to get the books. They can do that online. They can do that in a local church under the auspices of a local teacher, an abbot, or a pastor, but they need the books. They also need worship or discipleship, and they need life integration and work. Every young person needs to be working about 30 hours a week, as well as studying for 20 to 30 hours a week. That's about the right mix. And if you separate life integration or work from the books, you've got a highly irrelevant and probably a wasteful and counterproductive form of education going on. You've got to have work going on as well. Mentorship, work, as well as spiritual discipleship. I think every church in every local community will need a small discipleship center in which young people may be discipled in an elder's home in almost a media-free context. You're going to need some kind of spiritual mentorship, spiritual discipleship in the new dark age that is coming on with a breakdown of the Western world. And friends, that's what we've been doing in our Shepherd Center for the last 10 years here on the Eastern Plains of Colorado. And I would recommend it for every church community in America to say, we're done with college brick and mortar for the most part. Now it's time to restore spiritual mentorship and discipleship for our young people, for the 6 to 8 to 9 young people that God has given to us in our small little communities around the United States, around the Western world. Well, friends, that is the future for raising our children and launching them into their future work and into their future families and church communities. That will be the recipe to take us into the new dark age and to provide adequate discipleship and mentorship in the monasteries of the new dark age. Well, that wraps up this edition of the Generations Broadcast. If you'd like to email us as to what we are doing, feel free to email me at host@generations.org. That's host@generations.org as we prepare for the future. Well, I'd also recommend our book, Family Life, to you, which takes up the questions of education and the preparation of our children for their future career and life. Family Life is our introduction to the biblical Christian family, and that little book is available at our website, generations.org or kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson and Steve Vaughn, and we invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.